From WXXI News, I'm Leah Stacey, sitting in for Evan Dawson, and this is Connections. Our connection this hour was made 30 years ago when Robin Bannister operated an espresso bar in the atrium of Monroe Community College. Her son, John Swan, helped caffeinate the student masses. Today, Robin, John, and his sisters Paulina and Ashley own and operate Swan Family of Restaurants, a hospitality group that encompasses 8 locations as well as a catering company. Fun fact, before I came to City, the Swan Family of Restaurants was a client of mine, and I spent a lot of time in all those restaurants working on social media and marketing content. So today we're chatting about how the industry has changed, where you started, what projects are up next, and how you will continue the family legacy. My guest this hour, Robin Bannister, owner of the Swan Family of Restaurants. Your first time on the show.
Yes, first time.
That's so fun. And Jonathan Swan, owner of the Swan Family of Restaurants. You're not your first time on the show.
Not my first time, nope.
Okay. So, listeners, if you're in the Finger Lakes, you can listen in on our Geneva station, WEOS 89.5 FM. If you'd like to join the conversation otherwise, you can email us at connections@wxxi.org or call 844-295-8255 or 585-263-9994. So let's jump right in. Robin, I actually don't know the answer to this. Are you from Rochester originally?
No, I'm from the southern tier, Chautauqua County.
Okay, so what brought you here?
My children's father went to Brockport and started working in the area, and that's how we ended up in Pittsford.
Okay, so take us back to those days at MCC. That was new information for me. How did a coffee shop in MCC, or I guess maybe it was not even a full shop, turn into what is now, kind of a restaurant empire?
Well, I was trying to find an occupation that I'd be able to spend the most time with my children.
Yeah.
And the MCC schedule went along with the school schedule of my children. And my sister lived in Seattle where Starbucks was starting back then. And I had the first espresso bar in Rochester.
That is so neat. So where were you in MCC?
I had 2 locations, one in the art department gallery area, mm-hmm. the atrium, and then one in the main thoroughfare in Building 10.
And so how long did you do that?
About 12 years.
Okay. And from there, I know you transitioned to a very different model. So tell us about that.
Well, Sabon was on Park Avenue, and my children were working there during the summer. And a friend had purchased it recently, and he was struggling with the sales and asked me to consult with him to see what was wrong. And after about 3 months said, if you think you can fix it, do you want to take it off my hands?
Wow.
and my daughter, frankly, was, not doing so great at college. And so I used money and funds from that to because she enjoyed the industry.
And this is Ashley.
And this is Ashley.
Yeah.
Yep. Who's now the chef at Rue.
Yeah, and she's an incredibly talented chef. So
she
left college, you took over Sabon, and then I know she went to culinary school as well, right?
Yes, she went to the French culinary in Manhattan.
Yeah. So what year was that you took over Sabon?
2004.
Okay, so 20 years.
Yeah, it's been 20 years in that space. Yeah.
Oh, that's fun. And it's undergone a couple different identities. I mean, I remember when I was in college, I would go to Sabon and I loved the desserts there especially.
Yep.
And when it changed into Rue, I was like, oh no, my dessert spot. And then, of course, I was just in Rue over the weekend because I was like, where can I get steak frites and a martini? Because I just needed that. And I was like, oh, Rue. Yeah, of course. Sat at the bar with Dan. It was great.
Perfect.
Yeah. So you mentioned that everyone was already working in the restaurant. So, John, what was you worked in the MCC coffee shop.
Yeah, I did. Yeah, it was fun.
And how old were you when that was happening?
Well, I think I was probably 15.
15, okay.
15, I would think. I remember being there a little bit when I was 15. Then once I got my car when I was 16, I was working there quite a bit.
Okay. So you started in the coffee industry, and then I know you went to Nazareth. So tell us a little bit about your journey. Were you planning to go into the restaurant business?
No, not at all. I didn't really... There's something that drew me to it. I mean, it was obviously easy for me to get the job for my mom, and there's something about a kitchen that reminded me reminded me of athletics that I always loved. Chefs are kind of akin to football coaches in a way. At least some are.
I have never drawn that comparison, but it's not untrue.
No. Yeah. Especially the one that my mom skipped over a portion of her history somehow, but there was a restaurant called West Coast Cafe, and the chef then, Cervelloni, he could be picky, and it didn't turn me off to restaurants. Actually, it's kind of what I liked about it. But
yeah, because you were an athlete, so you were like used to that sort of energy.
Yeah, make me run up the hill. You know.
Yeah, yeah.
But no, I didn't. You know, I just didn't see that. I don't honestly know what I thought I was going to do. I knew I wasn't a great student. You know, that was like kind of the time where everybody's like, that's the expectation. You have to go to college, mm-hmm. especially where I went to school at Pittsford Mendon. If you didn't go to college, something was, if you weren't thinking about that, it was just ingrained in us to
the next
pursue
step.
That. Yeah.
Right.
So I did. I went to MCC for a semester or two right after high school, worked at the coffee shop. Then I transferred to NAS, mm-hmm. studied business. It's a liberal arts college, so, you know, it's kind of doing a little bit of everything.
Yeah.
I like to say I got a degree in intramural football and Madden, John Madden football.
I think my brothers have that degree as well.
Yeah. But I ended up graduating, and then after that, it's like, okay, you know, go get your job that applies to your major.
Yeah.
So I was studying business administration, went and got a sales job. I did pretty good with that, actually.
What were you selling?
Espresso machines, ironically.
Uh-huh.
And,
you knew about them.
Yeah. And I liked it, but it was just so monotonous. Mm-hmm. It lost my attention pretty quickly. I think I was there for about a year and a half.
Yeah. I think the first time I met you was right when the Daily Refresher opened, and I got assigned. I was freelancing for the Democratic Chronicle, and I got assigned to cover the opening, and I interviewed you and Cam, and that was the first time I met you. But that was not the first place you opened.
No.
So when did it happen? When did you, I'll let you talk about your first spot, which is still open.
Mm-hmm.
And when did things fall into place? Like, what clicked in your head where you're like at your sales job and you're like, this is not it?
Well, a couple things. I mean, I've been surrounded by entrepreneurs my whole life. The guy that I work for at Whole Latte Love was the company that I sold espresso machines for. He's a pretty inspiring guy, self-made guy.
Mm-hmm.
Hard worker, really creative. Had systems in his business to kind of show me how you can just get anything done if you put your mind to it and
mm-hmm.
Take care of business. So I think that was in the back of my head, kind of like it was like feeding something.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I'm really getting bored by being on the phone and, you know, selling espresso machines. Just wasn't for me. So I'd often go downtown to grab lunch at Sabone. I'd grab a panini sandwich, and the place next door was for rent. So quick negotiation there, just signed the lease, not knowing really what I was doing. Obviously, I had the support of mom to see me off, you know, let me take flight. But
yeah,
I also had never built anything with my hands before.
Oh, really?
You know, I was using like plug-in drills and learning how to, you know, just learning little things along the way, and kind of, I had a great time with that.
And what year was that?
2008.
2008. Okay. Mm-hmm. So now you've got these two spots next to each other, and I know that Paulina also started working pretty young in the industry. So tell us a little bit about what each of your three kids, how they started in the industry and what they're all doing now.
They all started at 16, roughly, mm-hmm. Just learning the business and helping. And they were always on payroll. There was no child labor issues.
Yeah.
And they were honestly, and I can still say to this day, my best employees. Hmm. They're all very hardworking. They're honest. They're great with customers. They're just very savvy as to what needs to be done. And, you know, I've been very blessed to have these three people as my children that way. And that we all work together is pretty fantastic. Ashley, they all do everything. They bartend. They could do any single job in the restaurant.
I've seen them do quite a few of those jobs, yeah.
And then Ashley had showed much more interest in potentially, you know, going to school for it. So I kind of tricked her because she wasn't really ready when she went. I kind of applied for her incognito, and she got accepted. And I sent her off to New York alone, which was a great thing for her because she's always been very close to me and not wanting to leave my side. Yeah. And so she lived in New York for a full year, which was great for her. Paulina is the most like me, I feel, as far as a jack of all trades. And she's very creative, doing menus, finding, researching throughout the world different styles of restaurants and food and how to create environments. And then John, of course, has done all the build-outs in the restaurant. And, you know, I tell everyone about how I attribute that to all the Legos that I bought him as a child and his definite sense that everything had to have symmetry.
Yeah.
But, you know, again, I can't stress enough how hardworking they are and how much they've developed over the years to become all three pretty much entrepreneurs.
Yeah. So, John, you've come a long way from the plug and drill. And now... just list off because I don't think everyone always knows what falls under Swan Family of Restaurants. Mm-hmm. And I know also there's the sort of Tetris of different owners, and you have some family outside the family owners, which mm-hmm. I definitely want you to talk about. But what is the actual rundown right now of all the places?
So Mom and I own the Alexander together.
Mm-hmm.
And then Mom owns Rue.
Mm-hmm.
And then... after Alexander, prior to this, was Ox and Stone. So spinoff from Ox and Stone, Paulina, Nick, Ryan, and I started Swan Dive. The Daily Refresher is Cameron and I. Dorado's me. Pearson's is me. And Leonore's is Paulina and Nick again. This is getting confusing already.
Yeah.
And
you need like a tattoo of all the animals.
Paulina already did that.
Yeah.
And Vern's is Casey, Ashley, Paulina, and I. Am I missing one?
You tell me.
Leonore's? Did I say Leonore's?
You said Leonore's, yeah.
I don't remember any. If there's
so you
any
have
more.
Eight, right?
Yeah.
So you have
I'm involved.
Three in Alexander. You're involved in all of them. Three in Alexander, five on Park Ave?
Yeah, I mean, correct? From... The ownership, it doesn't really, the percentage, the way we operate is not really a big conversation.
Yeah, yeah. But just to list them, I feel like when people hear the Swan Family of Restaurants, they're like, oh, so like which, they're like Swan Dive, because that's like the name recognition,
yeah, yeah,
right?
Yeah.
But then it's so interesting. I remember when I was working with you, it was like learning a bunch of different like personalities within a family, basically all these spots. And mm-hmm. when you do your branding, it's fun that you give like a different animal logo to each one of them. And so it's like these little characters. Then the latest one being, is Pearson's the latest, right? With the cat? The cat, yeah. And I love that story. And the Alexander is sort of your latest project, really. And I'll have you talk about the catering company as well. But the Alexander we just wrote about in our October issue, Kellen Beck did a great piece on that because the building itself has so much lore. So it was a perfect fit for our October issue. But talk about the pivot there. What made you, I love what you talk about in the article, how you wanted to hold on to the building. So, you know, tell us why away from Ox and Stone to now the Alexander and what inspired that.
Sure. Every place, all of our places have had their own, you know, ups and downs, you know, and you got to pivot in small ways for some of them. Maybe it's a menu change, maybe, you know, something, some ingredients just no longer trendy or mm-hmm. what have you. With the Alexander, that area is in a bit of a transition, in my opinion. For case in point would be just how people enjoy their night, their nightlife. It's just not.
Yeah, that's changed for sure.
Yeah. So yeah. Ox and Stone was built on the idea that we're going to have these parties at night, and it's going to be a great time. People are going to be drinking cocktails and mm-hmm. staying, you know, out late till 2 a.m.
Yeah, you had like salsa dancing.
Yeah, the
there,
whole thing.
And, yeah.
And that dried up in the area a little bit. Mm-hmm. And so bit Ox and Stone, for me, the closure of that, it's kind of pretty bittersweet, really. Mm. We had a great run there, but it was just pretty clear that the societal shift kind of over there just we had to change the business model.
Yeah.
And so as we were considering that, we get a lot of interest from people wanting to do parties at Vern's or Rue, for instance. We can't accommodate mm-hmm. those. So that kind of opened up our eyes to maybe we've got this big space. Maybe we can kind of shift some of those parties over to the Alexander for special events, et cetera. But, you know, anything that we've ever done has been built on a really strong restaurant program,
mm-hmm.
we think. So Alexander's no different.
And who is the chef there right now?
Tony.
Tony, yeah. So he stayed through the Ox and Stone transition. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Tony's great.
Yeah, he's a good kid. And yeah, so I mean, and there's and logistically, the building's got its challenges.
Yeah, you know, it's a beautiful building, though.
Yeah. Yeah, it's designed by, you know, the Jerrys, and, you know, they're chefs, and, I mean, mm-hmm. the kitchen's huge.
And you're going back to, like, the Riobamba days.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. It's a challenge logistically to make the numbers work exactly the way you really want to. I mean, it's got to be wildly busy every night to carry the number of cooks you have to operate in that giant kitchen. And,
yeah.
So that it made us think, okay, well, we can retool the kitchen,
mm-hmm.
Retool our service, and probably have a little bit more success.
Yeah. And Robin, I liked what you were telling me a little bit about your design inspiration over there. For the way that it
yeah.
looks now.
Because it reminded me of the Hemingway House in mm-hmm. Key West, the Victorian era. And I hopefully have accomplished bringing kind of some of that. It's like kind of vacation-y at any time of the year in there.
Yeah.
People seem to really enjoy it. It's like my home. I'm kind of living there right now. So I feel it's been very well received. And unfortunately, it came off at first when we first opened as an event space only by some of the wording in the public, you know, from the newspaper articles and things. So we've had a little challenge with that, making people understand that there's actually a restaurant also going on in there.
Yeah.
But I think it's starting to come around.
Yeah, it looks I was looking at social media yesterday, the Alexander social media, and there was like a delicious pasta on there. And I had brunch there. And it was really, really great.
Oh, thank you.
So,
yeah, with a place like that, you kind of have a responsibility, I think, to carry the torch. I
mm-hmm.
mean, the building's iconic. So you don't, I think it would be a real misstep if we were to go in there and start knocking walls down and, you know, changing any of the bones of the place. Show those off.
Yeah.
You know, it's Rochester history there.
Yeah, so, and for people who might not know, can you talk a little bit about the history of the building?
I mean, I'll probably miss some, but I mean, it's been, from my understanding, a restaurant operating since the 40s
mm-hmm.
from various different ownerships. Kind of like a similar theme. Everybody's kind of had a higher end culinary approach there. You know, different focuses, different, you know, cuisine styles, of course. But I think what's always been true is people go there and they know it's going to be probably a little bit more refined than what is common around that area.
Yeah.
It really is a beautiful place.
Yeah, it's not like you're not going to have like a throwdown DJ night there like you might at Swan Dive, right?
No.
But here I've seen weddings happen in that building, and I also did not know that it was a family home. Before it ever became, like, could you imagine living in
it? Yes, I guess it was built by a doctor for his daughter.
Yeah.
Or something like that.
Yeah. And it's
in 1880.
Yep, it's 140 years old. Yeah, Kellen did some good fact checking on this article. And if you pick up a copy of the October City, you can see that on page 16. We had some trouble finding older photos of it. A lot of them are not even in the library archives. So we found some like old DNC articles and we're looking at those. But it is just this beautiful building with this turret and, you know, had servant quarters at one point. And
yeah, at one point they sheared off the front section. They even removed some of the brick facade. So they actually recessed the entire building like 10 feet or something like that. Put the new facade on. I mean, I'm going way back, early 1900s probably, mid-1900s. And in the front, they had like a drive-up store, like built where the current entry to the driveway is.
Yeah.
Like where horse and buggy would go up and, I don't know, grab milk or whatever. I don't know what they're doing.
Like a general store. Yeah.
Isn't that wild? I'm so cool.
Yeah. Yeah, this issue is just filled with stories about a Rochester that we will never know. But I love that that building is still standing and still operating in, you know, such a unique way. And you mentioned this, but the neighborhood is undergoing some changes. And we've all in the office been kind of keeping an eye on the first it was Friday closures in that neighborhood, Friday night closures. And I actually tried to drive over there and get pizza from Swan Dive like two Fridays ago.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh my gosh, what's going on? I thought like something happened. And then I remembered that the closures were going on and now it's extended. Can you talk about that a little bit? And just as business owners, like how that's affecting you?
Well, it's just a challenge. I mean, but in my opinion, things have happened late, you know, but I guess better late than never.
You mean this decision has happened late?
An impactful decision has been made.
Yeah.
And there's been some building ownership change in the area, a significant one as of late. The new owners have all the best intentions in mind and can kind of see the potential of the area, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Which is really important. So the current idea, and I kind of think this would work because you see examples of it in other cities, successful, but it's basically converting it truly to an entertainment district where there's kind of access points for pedestrians and at a certain time where you can get in and everybody's, you know, safe and sound and kind of really treating it as a distinct district, which should help provide a format for future events and, you know, just more continuity, I think, in the area would.
Yeah.
Which is definitely what it needs. I mean, I do have to say, in fact, because we basically have, you know, a stronghold on Alexander Street. We have a stronghold down on Park Avenue. And Park Ave is not collaborative. It just isn't. It just happens to be.
You mean between business owners?
Yeah. I mean, we collaborate with ourselves and we make up a huge amount of the businesses down there, but it's not really a collaborative thing like it used to be back when I first started. PAMA was really strong. That's the Park Ave Merchants Association. And that was a strong presence when I first started. It's not that anymore. Alexander Street, on the other hand, is really collaborative. Now, there's a lot of differences of opinions, which is good in my opinion, because you end up with a lot of passion and, you know, people trying really hard and trying new things. But I'm excited to have some support directionally for that area that I think is really important.
From the city, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, every city has to have an area that is, you know, that's where you go to, you know, mess around it, you know, hang out and do whatever.
It's a designated nightlife district, essentially. Yeah.
And I think
You can feel safe when you go out.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I remember going out down there during college and I never felt unsafe.
Yeah. We also didn't think about it, right? You know, so now I think what's changed is people now are considering that's entered their thought process.
Yeah. Because things have happened and that's natural. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I think, you know, that's everywhere in the city. I mean, people think the same. I used to think this way. I think a little bit about like the St. Paul area when I was younger. I remember like, oh, you got to kind of keep your head on a swivel right here. But once you get into Water Street, you're good. You know, remember, it's like every little area was going to have their ups and downs.
Yeah,
for sure.
Just like any city.
Yeah, it's a challenge.
Any city. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm glad to hear that it's a positive thing in your minds. I'm curious, like, so when people want to head down there and they're like, are you getting questions about like, oh, where do we park? Or do they like pull up to the barriers and they
say. Well, we've tried it 2 weekends now, right?
Right. So, yeah, it's early days.
It's really early. So I think it's still very experimental. And yeah. The meetings I've had with, or the meetings I've attended, I don't want to misguide anybody. I have not had any impact on the direction of these ideas. I've been a supporter because I get clued mm-hmm. in by Louis Mayer, who's he basically runs the East NA group.
Association, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And my buddies, Max Giannini mm-hmm. and his brother Blake, and he bought those buildings.
Yes,
and
yeah.
A couple other business owners downtown that we all kind of see eye to eye. So I support, like I said, I support a change, you know, just something different.
Yeah.
Before it was, let's put a bunch of lights on the street, illuminate it, and
right.
it looks like something already happened.
Right.
And so every time I go to a meeting, everybody knows John's going to say something about public perception. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really important. So when they highlight it as an entertainment district in this way, I think has a chance to change some minds and hopefully get back to a point where you're going down there thinking about who you're going to meet up with, not if I'm going to get there okay.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. No, I remember it was such a great spot to just like land for the night because you knew you could have dinner and then drinks, and then if you wanted to do like one last late night, like go hear a DJ or something,
right,
you could just be on foot the whole time, and it was great.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's encouraging to see that some steps are being taken to make that area really come alive again.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Because I've noticed when I've gone down there, because I'll still go down, like it's just quieter.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Yep. So it'll be good to see what happens here.
Sure.
Yeah.
We are going to take our only break of the hour. And when we come back, more from our guests, Robin Bannister and John Swan of the Swan Family of Restaurants.
I'm Megan Mack. Monday on The Next Connections. In our first hour, we talk with candidates running for office. We start with Luis Martinez, candidate for New York State Senate in District 55. Then we talk with Sarah Clark, who's running for re-election in Assembly District 136. In our second hour, what are the costs and consequences of a car-centric society? We discuss that question with guests from Reconnect Rochester, the City of Rochester, and RTS.
Sure.
Cool.
Welcome back. I'm Leah Stacey. We are chatting with Robin Bannister and John Swan from the Swan Family of Restaurants today. And we're kind of talking state of the industry right now, at least over on East and Alex. I want to pivot over to Park Ave because that's where your newest project, Pearson's, is happening. And John, you said that one, you're the sole owner, but I know that there's been hands in that. So can you tell us a little bit about... one of the things I love when I go in Pearson's, I'm going to be honest, is like this curation of really cool products. I know that if I need a unique gift for somebody who's like a traveler or like really into like fun new food and bev products, like I'm going to go into Pearson's, I'm going to find a really good gift for them. So can you talk about how this concept came together? I know you're also running a catering kitchen out of there.
Mm-hmm.
You've had some cool pop-up events. So talk about Pearson's.
Yeah, I mean, I'm honest to God, flying by the seat of my pants on that one. I don't really know.
Isn't that
what
like
it
every
is.
Project though? Like that's how this goes.
Yeah, I mean this one more so. There's so many things going on, and I put a lot of trust in some key managers and you know, to make decisions on their own that under guidance, of course. But really, Pearson's is supposed to be, you know, kind of a do it all kind of place. My best version of it is this dream scenario I have. I always try to think about the guest from the guest perspective, any place I do.
Mm-hmm.
So I like to think a guest comes in there and they might sit down, they're having a cup of coffee, but the conversation they're overhearing is maybe a couple of my chefs talking about a cool dish that they're working on, or, you know, something of that nature. And it's like this spot where there's like a creative fission going on within our group. And people outside of our group come and talk food, talk hospitality, that kind of thing. And people can kind of see the behind the scenes.
Yeah, the open kitchen is very cool.
Yeah. Because I think a lot of people take for granted going to a restaurant and the experience that they get there. And they don't necessarily, and I don't really want them to think about all that goes into it.
Well, like how the sausage is made?
Yeah. You know, all that. But the people that have decided that this is the career for them are pretty special people, I think. And, you know, there's a lot of energy put into these curated nights for our guests. And, you know, a lot of energy goes into it. A lot of, you know, self-sacrifice goes into it. And, you know, that's kind of how I picture Pearson's. This is like the epicenter of all we're doing. Yeah. Is that really happening? Yeah, I think it actually is sometimes. The retail products, you know, you get inspired by things as you travel, or things you buy, or things you touch or feel and see and all that. Mm-hmm. So that's a representation of those experiences we've had or been inspired by. And I don't know, like I said, I don't really know what it is. I know we sell good coffee. And we try to make good food, and you know, people seem to like it.
Yeah, and talk about some of the pop-ups that have happened there.
Yeah, so again, I want to be really collaborative. I want to be like a place that's feeding the community and kind of be the third place for people.
Yeah, love that term.
And some people actually that have worked for us or currently work for us have their own ideas of what their third place would be, and
so
I can provide the space for them to be able to execute those endeavors. And sometimes, like Cruz, for instance, has done a couple pop-ups there, and it's just a good space to, you know, to gather, really.
Yeah. Well, I went to the Shell pop-up that Cruz did, one of them. That was great. And you can kind of like hear them back in the kitchen. You can see what they're doing. And then Michelle, I went to.
Yeah, Michelle. Great.
And I was back in the kitchen myself making pasta. And I was like, this is fun. I feel like I shouldn't be allowed back here, which is kind of, you know, part of the fun, of course. And it's designed in a way. And I know you took it over from when it was Glen Edith.
Mm-hmm.
Formerly, I wanted to say Poor. Because
it was
we remember Poor like that, and it's when you were talking about like creatives gathering there. Like, I came up with some of my first like creative ideas.
Same here. It was like my office there,
right? I feel like it was like a lot of you would just see people, yeah. But I think you guys have retained a lot of that because I went in the other day to grab a coffee, and there were people like having brainstorms like in the middle of the, you know, the seating area, and then. There's people shopping products, and you've got Mike back there baking and Andy making desserts. Mm-hmm. And that's another cool thing I think that's happening at Pearson's is you've been able to centralize some of your baking and dessert making for all the places, right? Or like at least a handful of them.
Yeah. There's got to be five of them doing. Andy, you're. How many are getting from there right now? I think all of them.
I know I do a couple checks from some of the other places to
Pearson. Yeah.
Well, in Robin, the catering was happening out of Ox and Stone for a long time,
mm-hmm.
and that's led by Devon.
It still does.
Yeah.
Parts of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So can you talk a little bit about the catering operation as well?
Well, the catering operation, I mean, Devon heads it up, and it's becoming very successful, I feel, based on what I see coming out of there. But we also are doing so many events at the Alexander that this kitchen is able to, you know, roll out all of this food even while the restaurant is open.
Yeah.
Yeah, during the reconfiguration, we devoted some space to be able to handle these events.
Yeah. And you guys are doing everything from like bar mitzvahs to weddings to, I mean, it's like a full scale catering operation in addition to all the brick and mortars that you have.
And we also are having a fashion show by Panache.
Oh.
You'll have to look at that on our, I don't have the exact date in my mind right now, but I know it's coming up in November.
At the Alexander. Fun.
And we also have jazz on Friday nights. So kind of look at our website and see what's going on there. We're doing a lot of collaboration with musicians from Eastman.
Oh, I love that because I feel like they don't have enough places to go and just like jam. So that's great. I mean, we forget that we have a world-class musical school here sometimes. And it's like they need places to have open mic and just like do their thing and get their art out in the world and see how people are reacting to it, right? Like that's so important.
Yeah, that program's really good. Every interaction I've had with a student from there has been exceptional, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, they're so eager.
Yeah.
They really just love music. Every single one I've ever dealt with.
Right. I mean, I always love like walking down Gibbs or like you get into the neighborhood that's right there and there's like an open window and someone's just playing an instrument.
Yeah,
and you're
like,
this is so great. Yeah. Okay. Yep. So you have extra events going on there that people can just kind of show up for. And I know that a lot of the restaurants do like pairing dinners as well. I mean, I feel like there's always something going on. So
yeah, I feel like we hit like a good niche of need. There's it's kind of a unique size space. So there's a lot of event venues that have opened up in the past 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're all okay. Well, we got to
which
hit.
We needed them.
Oh yeah, you need 200. You got to feed 200 mm-hmm. people, 300 people, whatever. And those, you know. Those are essential.
Yeah.
But lost in the shuffle somehow was, you know, I got 60 people, I got 50 people, and 80 people. We hit all those really well.
Right.
I think another thing that happens with a lot of the event venues, they, you know, they're big open spaces. So there's not, you start to erode character and, you know, beauty of the actual place. And
yeah, it becomes like utilitarian.
Yeah, there's no shortage of character at the Alexander, that's for sure.
Yeah. Well, and I feel like there's a lot of character in the food that your group makes as well. And it's fun when people have like a favorite restaurant within the group and they're like, oh, can you put this as part of my catering? And like, that's so fun for mm-hmm. folks. And I remember when I was like, I would see tomato pie go out in some of these events and people mm-hmm. are like, oh my God, that's the Burns tomato pie. Are you kidding me right now? Like I'm at a wedding and I'm getting Burns tomato pie. It's so fun. So as you are all putting together events and sort of looking at the industry and saying like, we want to provide this thing, what do you think that there are things that the industry could use more of or less of? Like, do you feel like there's either under or oversaturation of, I mean, is it pairing dinners? Is it a certain kind of cuisine? Like, what do you see in the industry right now?
Well, I think my thoughts have shifted a little bit on, I think we have a really good range in Rochester, actually. Mm-hmm. And I'm a dad of three little ones. So I don't see a place that feels great for, you know, where are you bringing your kids, you know,
I've heard this a lot from readers as well.
Yeah. So, I mean,
for like dinner.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that's
the Alexander is the perfect place. I have things for children to do at the table.
Oh, that's
I
cute.
Have great seating
did
for
I
them.
Did I set you up
special.
A plug perfectly?
You did.
Or what?
You did.
Nice. Have you not brought your kids into the Alexander?
No, I have. Yeah, a couple times. No, they do. They do well there. I mean, that's what I'm getting at, though.
Yeah.
It's like a space that's. Where are you going to? I mean, no offense to like Cheesecake Factory, but I just can't do it. I'm not going there. I don't want to go to a place like that.
You want to go somewhere local. You want to support local.
Totally.
Yeah.
And I wish there was more, you know, competing in that space is really fun, I think.
Yeah. Because your kids are not going to stay seated the whole time.
Yeah.
Right?
Totally.
I mean, how old are your kids?
5, 3, and 2.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's
pretty good.
I've hung out with your kids at events.
Yeah.
You're like, they do want to draw on the sidewalk, though, if we're outside.
Totally.
And we love that.
Totally.
Okay, that's a really interesting one. And yeah, I mean, as you were saying, I'm like, I can hear other friends who have kids, I've heard that from them as well. What do you think, Robin?
Well, that was one of my actual thoughts about the Alexander, and that's why the menu is geared the way it is. There's actually quite a few menu items that can be shared with children. And I also brought some pastas back that I used to serve at Sabon that were favorites of family. Mm-hmm. So I'm really trying to promote that there. It is a beautiful space that you can go out to dinner and feel free to bring your family.
Yeah. Do you see other things that you think the industry could do more of, or do you see an oversaturation of things?
Well, I do like the social club atmosphere that used to be, and a lot of larger cities are starting to have more of those types of things going on. And I have, you know, my great Joe that works for me, we are trying to implement more and more of those type of style of dinners, where people, you know, may not have the capacity to have a dinner in their home for a group of 10 people, and they could have it at the Alexander. We have different size rooms for that. But I do like, you know, people just getting together that don't know each other. We're having a Sicilian wine dinner, and I'm going to set it up as such where you have to meet new people.
I love that.
You can't have just a two top or a four top.
Yeah.
Yep.
Get outside your comfort zone a little bit.
Yep.
We do have to shout out Joe, because this is Joe Morrell that you're talking about, who interned here for a semester. And I'm always like, you want to come back? Do you want to intern again? I know you graduated, but like, do you want to intern again? Joe is so great.
He's got a fire.
Very dynamic man.
An ideas man.
Yes.
You know what we don't do well in Rochester too is another thing. I feel like this all the time. And it's part of what we try to strive to do as a group. We try to a little bit teach you how to do this, you know, how to eat, how to just through, okay, you can't mess this selection up and this, you should be drinking this or that. But I don't want to be too pushy about it. You know, it's like, I'm not, you don't want to put on the menu like you have to buy this. You know, Merlot or whatever.
Guided pairings, taste together, that sort of thing.
And it's like people in my, and I was like that. It takes experience, right? But you know, a lot of people drink a espresso martini with their pasta. Yeah, it's like, it's like an interesting choice. You know, I'd rather it be like, oh my God, you're going to really enjoy this pasta.
So just that exploratory. Yeah.
Have this wine with this pasta that will, you know, break down the fat in the sauce and let you enjoy it. And then after you have the espresso martini so you can rage later.
Yeah.
Or whatever you got to do, you know, it's kind
of. You know, that's really been like the whole reason that my favorite thing about what I've done, it wasn't my career of choice. I did it honestly to make money for my children and I to survive, but I feel like I love to bring new things to people.
Yeah.
And I was, you know, in 1994 telling people, no, it's pronounced latte, not lat, you know?
Oh, wow.
And even portobello mushroom paninis, people were like, what are those?
Yeah, you know? We've come so far.
So we still do that today. We just traveled, my girls and I, to London and Paris. We came back and we have more ideas we're going to bring out. So
I love that. Mm-hmm. And you met James Blake.
Yes.
I saw that. I was like,
on the street.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So let's talk about, just in these last couple of minutes we have, anything coming up that you're excited about? You know, I mean, John, I'm going to be honest. I've heard rumors that you have another project in the works. I'm not sure if you're ready to talk about it.
Yeah, we have another project in the works. It's kind of, first, Leonore's. Tough to get a reservation on the weekends.
I truly love Leonore's, not to, you know, say the, oh, and we should talk about where the names are coming from for Vern's, Leonore's, and Pierce's.
Oh, yeah, it's my grandparents.
Yeah.
Okay, Vern, Grandpa, Leonore, Grandma, that's my dad's parents.
Mm-hmm.
And Pearson's was the shop we'd go to buy penny candy when we visited them. So,
so great.
Pearson's was.
Yeah.
So that good story. It's great to think about them all the time, but Leonore's, we're expanding a little bit, so we'll have more dining space to accommodate more guests.
Great.
During that dinner hour, which is pretty essential to the business there.
Mm-hmm.
And then next door to Pearson's, we've got a project, again, flying by the seat of our pants here, but we've got a couple ideas about what the cuisine's going to look like.
And this is in the former...
Public house.
Yes.
Preps.
So kind of like backs up to Pearson's and extends toward Park Ave, like that little alleyway.
Yeah.
I it's funny because like if you've been there, you know, if you went there, and if you're like, oh, there is something there, right? It's like, oh, yeah, there's a fence here.
I'm
a
convinced
building.
Like guys used to go there and just like hide from their wives and stuff or something like that. I think it's just like that kind of bar. So, and then it was like the late night college bar too.
I was gonna say I went late night college. It was very much like a divey sort of like. Keep your drink covered. I'm so sorry to say that on air, but we all know these places.
Totally, yeah.
So, and you got to be safe as a woman and a man these days. So you are completely changing. It's going to be a restaurant.
It'll be a place where food can be bought. Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know. I don't really. It's another challenging space. I seem to find these places that just have no. Man, I really got to make that work. Like,
yeah,
which is, I guess, a skill set for me now. But
yeah,
what I really am excited about that is because I get that the whole parking lot connects to Pearson, so it's gonna. I want it to feel a very collaborative experience.
Yeah.
I got a liquor license just recently at Pearson's, so we're gonna add some cocktails, and I plan to make. Kind of an outside space in that parking lot so people can, you know, in the summertime be out there kind of grazing around and milling
about.
So will
you be open later too?
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Okay. That's great.
Yeah, it should be great.
Yeah. So there will be, the idea is sort of a flow, but you're figuring out the exact.
Yeah, I really like the idea of like a barbecue, not in the sense of like Texas or, you know, Tennessee barbecue or picking like a specific style. But
yeah, because we're not those places.
Yeah, we're like a worldly, exactly, just be inspired by anywhere that's doing good barbecue. And then we have some, you mentioned Mike and Andy, I think, earlier, really talented bakers. So I have a really strong bread program.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's what a good sandwich is built on, at least.
Yeah.
But... I don't know.
It's exciting.
Yeah, we'll massage it into something that makes sense.
Do you have any sort of timeline right now?
No.
Okay.
To within the next 5 to 10 years.
Gutting the building first. Yeah.
No, I'm not going to gut it. Actually, you go in there and it's like, I have the same memories as you.
It's been
like,
years. I couldn't.
The aroma's bad.
Couldn't tell you the layout, but I.
A lot of spills.
I would have guessed that, yeah.
It was built by the owners of the wood shop.
Interesting.
That was there before Preps. So you got to go back dozens of years. I don't know.
No idea. Yeah.
And these guys built this beautiful bar. It's like, wow, if you peel this back, you get the lighting right, I could see it, you know? So maybe not a huge change to the layout, but definitely a change to the program.
Yeah. Cool. Well, exciting. Mm-hmm. So that'll be spot number 6 on Park Ave, right?
Yep.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
All right.
I like Park Ave.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So in our last couple minutes here, what if you had to make a prediction for the next 5-10 years individually, what's coming up? What do you hope for the Swan Family Restaurants or your individual places?
Well, I hope they're all just, you know, thriving and doing well. And I really hope the Alexander is stable.
Mm-hmm.
But for myself, I plan to retire.
Yeah.
I kind of was retired and
how'd this happen?
Came back to do the Alexander because I just couldn't bear to walk away from that space. That I was worried about it, frankly. So, I mean, that's for me. I'm going to travel.
Yeah.
Good for you.
What's next on your list?
I'm actually going to see the Panama Canal at the end of the year here.
Cool.
That's my next trip.
Very cool. Yeah. All right, John, what about you?
What's the timeline? 5 to 10 years, you said?
Yeah. Well, we know that sometime in that time, you'll reopen Public House.
Is there a way for my wife to block, like, can we block my wife from hearing this or... Because like,
no,
it'll change my...
I will not block Sarah Swan from anything.
I'm just kidding. I like the pursuit of this. And I like finding people that also like the pursuit of starting anything that's enriching the community. And I hear a lot of cool ideas. I don't know exactly where that takes me, but you know, I really like what I'm doing. Seem to be pretty good at it, finding good people to surround ourselves with and just kind of keep down this path.
Yeah. Yeah. And any words for Ashley, Paulina?
Where are you?
Yeah, where are you?
I was told their schedules would not allow for this today.
Yes. Children.
We do miss them.
There's no school in Brighton today.
Oh, of course. Yeah. Well, we'll get them next time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that'd be great.
You're good at this, Leah.
Oh, thank you. Yeah.
You're very good. Thank you.
I mean, you guys did great. You leaned right in.
Joe's going to, I told Joe I was going to wing it. He was going to prepare me notes.
Joe is probably taking notes right now on all of us. He did text me once during the show. Hi, Joe. And you know what? This show was pitched by Joe, and I think it was great to have this conversation. I learned a lot. Even working with the two of you for a few years, there are things that I still learn. And, you know, I think our food and beverage industry here is so strong, and your group is a huge part of that. And I always love to chat with people who really genuinely enjoy what they do. So, but last thing, rapid fire. If you are approached by someone who wants to go into this business, what's the number one piece of advice you're giving them?
Every day, take it as the day you're in and just roll with it, because every day there'll be something different.
Great.
That's a good one. You just kind of stole mine. Yeah.
Well, she did teach you everything you know.
Yeah. 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 No, it's a great opportunity to connect with people and just remember who you serve. It's the guest at the ultimate.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, so.
That's great.
That's it.
Well, I'll see you at one of your 18 spots soon.
Thanks.
My thanks to our guests today, John Swan, Robin Bannister of the Swan Family of Restaurants. Thanks to Julie and Rob in the booth. Thanks to Evan Dawson and Megan Mack for letting me host two shows today. Hope you're having a great Friday. I'm Leah Stacey. Thank you for listening to Member Supported Public Radio.